Oh, hi. We didn't see you come in.
No, I couldn't hear, and now I can hear. I guess that's...
You're home early.
It means it's time for another one of Dave and Darren's Top 5 Things podcast. This would be a review of what happened on our morning show on Planet 93.9.
That's what it says here on the paper.
There's no paper. Thanks for downloading it, subscribing it, and if you get a chance, leave a review. Tell people what you think of Dave and Darren's Top 5 Things.
No big whoop.
Let's get into it with number one here, Darren.
Number one.
Number one.
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 Number one.
Now, you were talking about the fact that you spent some time hanging out with the family this weekend. Makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
Being that it was Mother's Day, did you have the very difficult conversation concerning the air conditioner? As to what the strategy is going to be.
I'll tell you, it's funny that you mentioned that because, was it Saturday night? I went to bed way before anyone else in my house
did. Okay.
Saturday.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yep.
I called it a night.
Saturday was a nice day weather-wise.
It was a day to have the windows open.
Yes.
And I went to bed before anyone else.
You're almost asleep and you hear click.
Yep.
You hear.
She waited until I went to bed.
You hear all the windows close.
Uh-huh.
And then.
Uh-huh.
Voomph.
I'm just about to fall asleep and then I hear
almost
a noise. I'm
there.
Like, wait a minute.
Wait a minute. There's no air movement anymore.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, she turned it on right when I went to bed, thinking somehow I wouldn't notice.
Okay, so you didn't have a conversation.
No. We have frank and honest discussions about everything in my house except the HVAC situation.
Gotcha.
And that's a game that we play. It's a back and forth. There is no air conditioning detente going on right now. Yeah. Well, listen, if it's going to be... I know Morgan Strackbine, I was watching yesterday morning on Good Morning Quad City. She was talking about how this week... I mean, we already have to do the thing where we're telling people to make sure you stay hydrated. Because with the humidity and the heat that we'll have this week.
Yeah, and it's just you're not used to it. And all of a sudden it's going to be, you know, this is.
I mean, we were wearing winter
July,
coats.
July, August stuff.
We were wearing winter coats last week at my kids' track thing up in Clinton. And now we're talking about a heat index. That's where we're at. And you're right, we're not acclimated to it, so it is going to be a shock to the system.
Right. Thank you, Michael Jackson. Wait a minute. No, that was a state of shock.
Yeah, that was the one that he convinced Mick Jagger to be a part of, right?
Yeah.
It sounds like they wrote that in the
or at least...
course of an afternoon. Got to be mine, because you're so fine. I like the way you walk. Talk, baby, talk. I liked that song back in the day.
Uh-huh.
Listening to it now, I realize they didn't put a lot of thought into that song. The state of shock.
Mick might have given it just one take.
Well, you know what it seems like now to me whenever I listen to State of Shock by the Jacksons? Mick Jagger and the Jackson 5. It sounds to me like Mick Jagger's like, wait, did Paul do a song with him? Yeah. I should do something too now.
Uh-huh.
It just seems like he's only doing it because Paul McCartney did two. Did they do two songs?
They did.
No, just say, and the girl is mine, right?
Yeah, that's two.
Are they?
That counts as two songs.
Are they both on a Paul record, or is one on Michael's and one's on Paul's?
Right, one's on each.
Okay, I guess that makes sense. So Say is Paul McCartney's song and The Girl Is Mine is a Michael Jackson song?
Yes.
That's how that works. All right.
So Mick's going to, hey, wait a minute. What about me?
What am I missing out on? Here we go. Okay, I don't hate this song. I'll say it. I'll admit it.
Is that Tito?
You know damn well it's Tito. So this was the thing where the Jacksons were going out on tour, all of them. The Victory Tour.
Yeah.
And Michael was far and away the biggest star in the family. I'm looking at the album cover here. It's all the brothers up front, and they've got Micah, like, way in the back.
Take that.
What are you doing? And then this was the song that he did, and this was the only thing that that charted, right?
There might have been one other one.
That's just good writing.
Anyway, that's what you're going to be dealing with when this warm weather hits you in the face.
Yeah, we're not acclimated to it.
A state of shock.
Exactly. It's like
so when take it easy.
Right. Just don't be in a rush this week. Slow and steady. That's what wins the race. Art collector goes to a Goodwill store. This is in Texas, and it was 4 years ago. Laura Young finds this bust. It looks like an old Roman bust, right? Like it's like Julius Caesar or something. She spends like $40 on it.
It's like Little Caesar or something.
Exactly. She finds this at Goodwill. I guess she spent $34.99 on this bust.
I'll take it.
Yeah, and it looks like a reproduction of something that you would find in a Roman villa back in the day, right? $34.99 at the Goodwill. She had a hunch, because she's an art collector, something about this bust. I don't know. She thought it might be worth more than the $35 she dropped
on it. So I'll gladly give you the $35.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
No more talk, and I'm out of here.
So then she starts showing this bust to auction houses and a couple of art history experts at the University of Texas at Austin. They're trying to figure out, you know, where is this thing from? And then a Sotheby's consultant informed her, yeah, we know what that is. It is, in fact, an ancient Roman bust dating somewhere between the late 1st century B.C.
Good Lord.
And the 1st century A.D.
How is that possible?
That's what's so confusing. No idea how this thing made its way to the States. And I couldn't tell you how it made its way to the shelves of a Goodwill store in Texas.
Oh, but it survived all that time. Yeah.
The bust has a most peculiar history, they say. According to the San Antonio Museum of Art, the sculpture had originally been under the ownership of King Ludwig I of Bavaria and was housed at Aschaffenburg, Germany, at the Pompejaneum, a full-scale replica of a villa from Pompeii.
Now, are they saying that this thing is priceless?
Experts believe the bust...
Don't tell me that. Go ahead, put a price on it.
Priceless, I can't do anything
no,
with.
No, just go ahead. Go ahead and give me a price.
Make it a dollar. Place another dollar. Another dollar. Another
right.
Dollar.
None
another,
of this,
dollar
another
dollar.
None another dollar. Another priceless baloney.
Yeah, no. It's sentimental value to King Ludwig I of Bavaria. I need some cash.
I need an actual number.
It was from a full-scale replica of a villa from Pompeii. Experts believe the bust was modeled after the son of Pompey the Great, whom Julius
What's
Caesar
so great about you?
Had vanquished in a civil war.
Don't sound great.
King Ludwig died in 1868, but the sculpture stayed put until World War II. That's when the Pompejaneum was bombed by Allied forces, and the bust disappeared. That's the last anyone knew of this piece of work. This art piece, this sculpture. No idea how it made it to America. They think that a soldier stationed overseas probably brought it home. There's a bunch of military bases that extended and existed in Aschaffenburg after the war. As for the woman who bought it, she says she experienced a few months of intense excitement after she realized what she'd gotten her hands on, but that emotion turned bittersweet as she knew her time with the bust could only be temporary and that she wasn't going to get paid a penny for the artifact.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know,
yeah,
it was kind of taken without permission. She says, either way, I'm glad I get to be a small part in the long and complicated history. And he looked great in the house while I had him.
Now, this is probably going to make me feel worse, but go ahead and put a price on it.
It's priceless. Literally, it's so valuable you can't have it anymore, and we can't give you any money.
Give him an extra dollar.
That's not what I wanted to hear.
The bust will now make its way back to Germany, and it'll be on display. Well, shouldn't it, if we're taking it to where it belongs, shouldn't it go back to like Italy? Because this King Ludwig, he took it from somebody at some point. I don't know.
Give me that.
I would make an argument that, you know, I should get a little something.
Maybe I'm the one who should take it there. You know,
yeah,
with a free trip.
Yeah, you're getting nothing for the effort. So yeah, it's so valuable we can't give you any money for it. That's exactly what happened. Well, you know, I'm just thrilled that I got to be a part in the history of this thing.
The thrill is gone.
Thrill nothing. Number two. Someone is trying to sell a Pringle for $2,500.
That looks like what?
Well,
Richard Nixon?
Yeah, that would make more sense. This is just one Pringle, and it's misshapen.
Uh-huh.
So they're saying it's a rare Pringle. They want $2,500 for it.
Of course they do.
Picture in your mind's eye a Pringle, and then picture one of the ends is like folded in a little bit.
Mm.
That's what it is. It's a bizarrely
like
shaped
Crocodile Dundee's hat.
that's perfect, yes. That's kind of what it looks like. It is a sour cream and onion flavor Pringle that they're selling on eBay for $2,500 because they think the shape of this Pringle is extremely rare.
Now, do you remember from about a year ago?
Yeah.
They had the sweet corn flavored Pringles.
I do. And wasn't
that they had them marked down to like next to nothing.
The Rock Island Hy-Vee had one and it had a big thing and it was like buy them for a nickel and get 10 free.
And then eventually it was just take them.
Free. Yeah, the sweet corn Pringles were such a disaster that in the Rock Island Hy-Vee, when you walked in, it just said, take these. And people said free was too much money.
Now, having said that,
yeah.
I know that you've got a big to-do going on this weekend. I have an unopened can of those Pringles.
Oh, my goodness.
Which I would like to donate.
Well, I mean, that's very generous.
I would like
you
to donate those to you and your friends.
Yeah. Treat for everyone.
And you could do some sort of taste test.
I have a list here of bizarre Pringle flavors that you can't find here, but they sell in other parts of the world.
Okay.
Prawn Pringles.
All right.
It's like, prawn cocktail?
Like a shrimp cocktail.
Yeah.
Shrimp cocktail flavored Pringles.
A prawn is basically just a very big shrimp, right?
Shrimpy, very shrimp-like.
Isn't that what that...
very shrimp-like.
Oh, the guy that claimed to kill JonBenet Ramsey, wasn't he eating fistfuls of prawns? Available... Where is this? I don't know where you can get this. This is in China, I guess.
Yeah.
How would you feel about Eggs Benedict Pringles?
I feel better about Eggs Benedict.
Yeah. Although there's spinach on the can here, which leads me to believe this is more of an Eggs Florentine than an Eggs Benedict. Prawn cocktail Pringles are available in Germany. It spares you, it says here, the hassle of peeling and deveining prawns, giving you all the flavor as well as notes of tomato, vinegar, and mayonnaise. All in one little chip.
I don't know that mayonnaise is involved in any sort of cocktail sauce. Typically, it's just
ketchup and
horseradish and lemon.
There were hot dog flavor Pringles available exclusively at Walgreens for a time. The exclusive flavor Pringles Hot Diggity Dog.
Now, it would make sense to have wiener water gravy flavored Pringles at Walmart.
Walgreens. What is Emmental cheese?
Emmental cheese?
Emmental. Emmental cheese.
Okay.
What? It says here that's like a Swiss cheese.
Why don't we go with Swiss cheese?
This is only available in the Netherlands. The cheese is described here as buttery, creamy, and nutty. Australia had extreme explosive chili. Explosive chili in Australia. Pringles explosive chili flavor. You know what that sounds like to me?
Yeah.
Sounds like
you could be asking for it.
Yeah. I don't know what it tastes like, but I think I know what the end result is when you eat explosive chili Pringles.
Diarrhea.
Then there's Mickey Gilly flavored Pringles. It's like licking his neck.
May he rest in peace. Licking his neck a couple of weeks ago, not current day Mickey Gilly.
Yeah, no.
It's so cold. The explosive chili is supposed to have an intense jalapeno flavor balanced by cheese, cheese, and more cheese. Again, that's only available in Australia. In Russia, they sell crab-flavored Pringles. And there's also ketchup-flavored Pringles, but those are only available in Turkey. And finally, in Japan, mushroom soup-flavored Pringles. In Thailand, they have salt and seaweed flavored Pringles as well.
Something you found under a rock flavored Pringles.
Salt and seaweed? That seems like a ripoff. Is the person who's selling the Pringle for $2,500 going to get any of that money? I don't know. It looks like it's...
Doesn't mention the flavor, huh?
They have finance options here if you'd like to do it in installments. You can pay a certain price per month for a total of 2 years. But if you do that, you're paying more, you know. If you're buying the misshapen Pringle on credit. Nobody seems to be interested in purchasing this. Would that suck if you bit into, you're eating Pringles, and you bit into one, and then you bit into one and you looked and it was a rare-shaped one. You realize, oh, man, now it's worthless. I've eaten my fortune. That was my get-rich-quick scheme, and I blew it. I guess the lesson here is carefully inspect all of your Pringles.
They do also have an anonymous pledge of $4 million.
No. You're thinking of the Bison Bridge.
Well, it's going to be one or the other.
Who wants it more?
Who's going to work for it?
Number three.
A teacher at a middle school in North Carolina is in some trouble. The teacher and athletic director out of a job after he asked a student to move his truck, and that truck crashed into three school buses. Again, this is at a middle school in North Carolina.
There's the rub.
Yeah, that was your mistake. Here's the coverage from WSOC TV9 in North Carolina. Do we not have the...
He was the biggest one in his class.
I thought
he could handle it.
You know, ask a middle schooler to do a high schooler's job, I suppose.
Uh-huh.
After is off the job this morning, the school district says he asked a middle school student to drive his truck. Then the student crashed into three parked school buses. Just look at this picture of the damage.
Brother can't drive.
The car and the bus. It happened at Riverbend Middle School in Claremont last Friday. The district says it happened after Jason Oxentine asked the student to move his truck from the back of the school to the front of the school. That truck is now totaled. Nobody got hurt in the crash. Police did cite Oxentine. The district believes it's going to cost $6,700 to repair those buses.
Yeah, the buses, it's going to cost $6,700. The truck is a total loss.
Listen, undercover brother.
Yeah.
He's good at karate.
Yeah.
Brother can't drive.
Hey, Crashy. What are you doing down there?
So this kid hit three buses.
Or did he just start a chain reaction?
No, it says that...
How do you hit three of them?
Well, I think you're able to do that by being a small child who's been asked to drive a truck. And you don't learn to...
What is this, the Malachi Crunch?
It's exactly what it is. You know, I've worried about this for some time. So often at our demolition derby, school buses are used. And I wonder if we've been sending kids the wrong messages all these years.
It does make for an interesting idea at the like the Henry County Fair. It's a demo derby, but with like children.
The little tot demo derby.
The little, yeah.
I like it. Jason Oxentine, teacher assistant and the athletic director there at the middle school, asked a student to drive his truck from the back of the school to the front. I've got a lot on my plate right now. While the kid was moving the truck, they lost control and struck three parked school buses. One, two, three. The buses were damaged. Two employees on one of the buses at the time. Neither the student nor the employees were hurt, thank goodness.
You want to go ahead and move that vehicle for me? I got to go chalk the softball diamond.
Oxentine cited with a traffic citation for giving his keys to a minor, also immediately terminated from the Catawbas County Schools.
You're saying I'm terminated?
Yeah, we can't have you here anymore. You're giving children keys to your truck. Because what, you were too busy to move it from the front to the back?
No, I think it's the other way around.
Oh, well. Well, we need to rethink this.
I had it in the back.
Yeah, and now, not only do you not have a job, you don't have a truck. I'm wondering if maybe the school can help me pay for the damage to my truck. It was done by a student, so I think I'm entitled to a little...
Any chance I can borrow one of those buses?
A little something for the effort. We went to, in Galesburg, there's a new brewery called Artisan Reserve Ales. It'll be on an upcoming episode of Brewed. And the reason I bring this up is it's a great new brewery in an old, I think, Ford dealership there in Galesburg. And on the inside of this brewery...
What is it going to take me today to get you into that beer?
That's not a bad line. It's a pour-your-own brewery, which we've never been to before. We've been to pour-your-own places, but for a brewery to do that's an interesting idea. And the beer comes out of a decommissioned 1967 Peoria city bus. So you go to this bus and then you pour your own beer. It's a very cool look, and you should check that out if you're in Galesburg. But the story that these guys were telling me when I was there in Galesburg is the bus was a Peoria city bus, and it got decommissioned, as buses do. So on the last day that the bus driver had the bus, rather than bring it back to the bus barn, he just drove it home because he figured, well, they're not using it anymore.
And the bus is in the bar?
Yeah, it's inside. Huh. Yeah, they basically turned the bus into a massive cooler. So all the kegs go in the bus, and then you pour the beer out of where the windows would be in the bus. It's a very, very cool look. Great times. Good beers.
You can almost taste the kitty litter from where the kids threw up.
It's just, yeah, no standees. Exactly. But I have to say I was a little shocked with the idea of the bus drivers just get to take the buses home.
I don't think you do.
That doesn't seem like how anything should be.
Well,
like,
if nobody wants this.
Well, if you guys are just going to throw it out, I'll take your bus.
I love it.
I was like, so wait a minute. This is a stolen bus. And the guys at the brewery were like, Blake was like, well, I mean, if you want to ask a lot of questions, I mean, technically, I don't have the title to the bus. Like, okay.
I do want to ask a lot of questions.
That's why I'm here. Normally, I don't Mike Wallace my way through these interviews.
On camera.
But yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing had been sitting in a scrapyard forever. Again, it's from 1967. But yeah, it just seems weird to me that the bus driver could just say, well, if nobody's using it, I'll take the bus since it's been decommissioned.
It's the summer of love.
Exactly. Number four. Crazy story of a wedding where the power goes out. In a bizarre incident, two women narrowly escape marrying the wrong man amid a power outage at a wedding ceremony.
What?
This happened in India. The incident was reported at a village last week. The brides...
Just keep going. How often do you have a wedding that's right on top of each other? Well, it is India.
Yeah. You got a billion people to deal with.
So it's tight.
The brides identified as Nikita, Karishma, and Komal, three daughters of Rajneesh Bewer, were getting married on the same day at the same venue.
Okay. Three daughters, uh-huh. three sisters uh-huh. getting married to their guy.
Yes. Well, each their own guy.
Their own guy.
Yeah, they're all getting
right,
different
dad,
guys.
Dad was thinking, you know, if we could just bundle this.
Exactly. If I could just use the room
just
for
the
one day.
Time.
Mm-hmm. Nikita was supposed to get married to Bahola, while Karishma's wedding was fixed with Ganesh. The mix-up happened
what about
when
the third
Bahola...
One?
The third one's fine.
Okay, so the third one was never in danger of marrying the wrong guy.
No, the mix-up happened when Bahola and Ganesh mistakenly sat with each other's brides during a ritual at the wedding ceremony. The confusion elevated amid a power outage as both brides were in the same attire. The grooms exchanged their positions as soon as the power supply was restored, moments before the wedding ritual was set to begin.
Now, I wonder...
So the ritual was completed after the brides sat with their respective grooms,
so.
And it all worked out. But boy,
that was a
close one.
But if this was to lock you in, and there's nothing you can do about it, it's just that's the tradition here.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There's nothing that can be done. I wonder if all four of them would just kind of look at each other and just do kind of like this.
What difference does it make?
Just give a little shoulder shrug and just like,
yeah, well,
okay, let's
roll with the dice here.
You know, we'll just roll with it.
The mistake was rectified. The bride's father said his two daughters, both getting married on the same day, were wearing similar outfits, and when the lights went out, that's what caused the confusion.
Because I got a deal on those.
Yeah, I got
I bundled it.
I also... They wanted me to buy the package where the lights wouldn't go out. And I said, we'll take our chances.
Let's risk it.
Listen, I got three of these girls getting married on the same day.
Do you want a backup generator? What's that cost?
For what now?
For what? For the lights, so the lights don't go out. Do the lights ever go out? Not typically. Scratch it.
Rampant power cuts have been witnessed in parts of the country due to a shortage of coal. Also, power demand is at all-time high due to scorching heat across the country. There was another wedding-related incident in another part of India when a dispute broke out after a groom wore a sherwani to his wedding. That's something
the bride... Is that like the yank?
It's not like Adam and Eve's the yank.
No?
The sherwani is not something you strap to yourself.
The Indian equivalent... of the yank.
The groom wore a sherwani to his wedding.
Boy, he sure got a strange look on his face, doesn't he?
Boy, every step he takes down the aisle.
Every move he makes.
He gets a real kick out of himself.
Uh-huh.
Sherwani is a wedding outfit.
Oh.
That is worn over there.
Mm.
Sherwani signifies dignity and etiquette.
So does the yank.
Yeah, but I guess it's the national dress in Pakistan for men, and you could understand why in India they wouldn't dig that.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Incident took place, and the two sides started hurling stones at each other, and a violent clash ensued. Can you imagine going to a wedding, and it's like, do you see what the groom's wearing?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Go grab some stones.
Ladies and gentlemen, the stones.
The scuffle took place outside the village on Saturday after relatives of the bride insisted that the groom wear a dhoti kurta during the rituals and not the sherwani that he wanted to wear. If he doesn't change clothes, I'll tell you right now, we're going outside and we are going to find some rocks to throw at that family.
It's the equivalent of assless chaps.
It's not assless chaps.
Although I don't know why they say that? I mean, all chaps are assless, right?
Yes. Yes, that's just chaps.
Because that's just chaps.
Yeah, if you're chaps and no have reason... an ass, you're wearing pants.
Right. Yeah. There's no reason to call them assless chaps.
You're right. It is redundant. One last wedding story for you. This one from Nigeria. Getting a lot of attention. As the bride and groom enter their wedding reception, both wearing boxing gloves. They're about to get married. They show up at the wedding venue, the bride and groom again. This is in Nigeria. The bride comes in, and she's wearing boxer's gloves. And the bridesmaids behind her are all acting like they're members of her team. And then the husband jogs into the venue, and he's got boxing gloves on, too. They're basically doing the, you know, the walk into the reception hall. They're doing like they're about to have a prize fight.
Okay, so this isn't the wedding. This is the reception.
Yeah. Yeah. And everyone was wondering, are these two going to slug it out?
Someone starts trying to place bets.
Give me $10 on her. She's going to, I know how he fights, and he doesn't have the legs for this. If she can go, if she can take him to the third round,
she's got a horseshoe.
It's over.
She's got a horseshoe in that glove. I know her.
The something borrowed is a horseshoe.
She's going to clean his clock right now.
Oh, no. He's doing the rope-a-dope on her. Well, that's not okay. They didn't fight. But it's a...
And where did this take place?
That was in Nigeria.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, they had the power on the entire time for this. He's got a red robe on. Or she's got the red robe on, and he's wearing a blue robe, and yeah. They're entering like they're about to do a prize fight. That's an interesting idea. I like the theme that you're working on here. Reminds me of a little movie starring Barbara Streisand and Ryan O'Neal.
Oh, brother.
You remember it. It was the main event. And extra, extra, I'm in love.
It's the sort of thing that makes a great afternoon for a 10-year-old's birthday. Whose birthday was it that you went and saw?
It was the neighbor kid. We went and saw the main event.
You kids, we're going to go see a movie for his 10th birthday.
Yeah.
And he's chosen the main event.
Well, the main event was a more appropriate movie than there was another neighbor kid, and we went and saw Best Friends. That was the following summer where... the main event was 79, so I would have been eight. No, I would have been. No, I would have been six going on seven. And then it was a couple years later. Another neighbor kid. We went to the movies for his birthday, and we could have either seen Airplane 2 or Best Friends. And for some reason, we all went to see Best Friends. And as a 9-year-old, I saw Burt Reynolds give Goldie Hawn what's good in the shower, and I thought, well, this is an interesting choice.
This is just darn fine.
I was telling my kid the other day, because he's about the age that I was when Top Gun was in theaters, the original Top Gun.
Oh, and you went with your grandma.
I took my grandmother to see Top Gun, and we were enjoying it tremendously. And then the Berlin Song happens, and Tom Cruise and
Terry
Kelly
Nunn, take it away.
Kelly McGillis. And Tom Cruise spent a lot of time exploring each other's bodies. And I'm sitting there with my grandmother like, I did not know that. I apologize. I thought this movie was just going to be about cool planes.
Is this why you like this movie, Grandma?
Yeah, it was something else. And then, you know, we were kind of like, all right, we're not going to.
So why are you sharing that with your son?
Well, because the new Top Gun is
oh,
opening.
Right. Well, and you know there's going to be a scene like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was explaining, like, yeah, I was about your age, and I took my grandmother to see it. And I'm like, it's pretty graphic what goes
on. And I'm sure there's going to be some girl in her 30s.
Oh, no.
Some woman in her 30s.
I'm getting triggered by this right now.
Who's going to pretend that Tom Cruise isn't in his 90s.
You know, I think that it's an age-appropriate love interest in this new movie.
Yeah, I bet.
No, I think it's that Jennifer Connelly. I think that's... No. Please stop this. This is...
This eventually became Grandma's ringtone. Every time you rang the doorbell, this is what played.
It was, you know, I enjoy uncomfortable moments that don't involve me directly.
I remember that.
That involved me very directly.
And then that summer, I'd go and mow Grandma's yard, and she'd blast that on a jam box.
Well, we went out for a quick bite to
afterwards.
Eat after the movie, and we were talking about how much we enjoyed most of the movie. And we were very careful to
say
kind of
most of the movie.
Skirt around what we were, you know.
Yeah, most
I remember
of the
being
movie.
Like, well, I didn't care for one part. And I'm like, I know what you're talking about. And let's just move past that. And
listen, it's natural.
Yeah. But it would have been more natural to not watch that with my grandmother at the time.
Yeah, that's a little less natural.
Number five.
The comedy Wedding Crashers.
Yes.
I've not seen it.
Really?
Is the gimmick that they go to weddings because it's a party and there are women to hook up with?
Yes.
Or are they stealing money?
No, that's what it is. It's just basically to go party and meet girls.
They meet girls at weddings because
And they have
the theory is that women at weddings are looking to hook up. Is that what it is? Or
that's apparently their theory.
Okay, all right. There's a wedding crasher bandit who has been apprehended in the Phoenix area. This guy earned himself the nickname the Wedding Crasher Bandit after stealing cash and checks from 11 different weddings there in the Phoenix area.
Yeah, they weren't doing that.
Okay. Because that wouldn't be fun. That's not a fun comedy if Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn are stealing money from people. Wow, we just take your money. Wow.
Maybe money that people have been setting aside for quite some time.
Right. Right.
It's like, you know, for years, we've put money aside so that when you finally got married, we could give you a fantastic gift.
Wow. I'll just take that.
Give me that.
I'll just take that envelope. Wow, that's a lot of money. Landon Rankin is this guy's name, and does it shock you to learn that he is a retired sheriff's deputy? That was a twist we didn't see coming.
So not a young guy.
No, a retired sheriff's... I know, it's shocking. He's been arrested for allegedly stealing cash and checks from 11 different weddings in the Phoenix area. He was not invited to any of these weddings. 54-year-old Rankin, who was an officer with the county sheriff's office for 21 years, arrested last Wednesday. Following his arrest, he was charged with burglary and possession of drugs and drug paraphernalia.
I wonder if they've got a sliding scale somewhere. Probably do.
Hmm.
You can find anything, right? Find anything on the internet. A sliding scale that would tell you, depending on what your relationship is with that particular person, what is a adequate cash gift? What is a fair, you know, a good, a great, different? Okay, is it your, you know, is it a friend? Is it a best friend? Is it a niece? Is it a nephew?
You would like
is
there to be some sort of chart that explains.
Is there a chart to show you that, okay, this would be, that is a good cash gift.
Never give less than $50. This
okay,
rule applies to every wedding, whether it's a small backyard nuptial or an over-the-top affair.
Because the idea there is just to help pay for the catering.
Well, see, that's what I've always heard. You're supposed to match the cost per head. But that is obsolete. Your gift should not be about reimbursing the couple for their
wedding.
Because
a lot of times they're not the ones paying for it.
Yeah, I guess. On average, your guest will spend between $75 and $200 on wedding gift money.
Okay. So, but what about if it's... But I guess it would depend on...
The national average for wedding gift money...
Yeah.
Is $160.
$160.
It also depends on if you're going solo or with a date.
Okay.
Should your cash gift amount be based on your financial situation? Right, because if you're broke...
No, it's different.
Yeah. Well, when, you know, like when you're just out of school and you've got friends getting married, it's like, good for you.
Yeah, that's one thing. But
I'm having a rough time paying my college loans and the rent as it is. They say the easy rule of thumb is you should stay within the average range of $75 to $200.
Okay.
But also you have to look at your relationship with the couple.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. When you're giving money for a wedding gift and attending solo, etiquette says you should spend between $50 and $75 if you're going by yourself. You may also want to consider the couple you're celebrating. If it's a coworker,
yeah,
or someone you just catch up with from time to time,
right,
the lower end of the spectrum is appropriate.
Yeah.
But if it's a close friend or family member, then you should consider going higher in the $75 range to even $100. If you've been invited as a couple, it says here the $150 number is a more appropriate wedding gift.
Okay, but you're invited as a couple, but you go as your own.
Well, yeah, I think if you're attending solo, you do $75. If it's a couple, you're supposed to do $150. I guess that makes sense. That's, boy.
They seem kind of low to me for family members.
How much money do you give a couple if you're not going to the wedding?
Or, or how much do you give so you can get out of going to the wedding?
Yeah. The rule of thumb here on this guide, if you can't make it to the wedding...
You jack it up a bit?
No, you just do $50.
Oh.
$50 if you can't make it to the wedding.
Hey, I'm going to check a box here.
Uh-huh.
By the way... I will take the chicken. I'll just take it to go. I'm gonna take the chicken for delivery. I created my own box to check.
American Express spending and saving tracker says the average amount that a guest is projected to spend on a wedding gift is $99. But if you're a friend of the couple. If you're a family member, it's $127.
Okay.
Should I give a wedding gift that matches the price per head? Again, they're saying that is
obsolete.
An outdated way of looking at things.
And how would you know what the price is per head?
Well, I mean, you can do the math. You know.
Well, you don't.
A third of people give cash as a wedding gift.
What, to make it nice and simple?
I guess.
So that I think you do it flush with cash right away.
Well, you do a check in case something happens to the money.
Well, yeah, that would
isn't
make,
that why that, you do it?
That would make sense to me.
Because a wedding crasher is like this guy out in Phoenix. At the time of his arrest, he had two checks in his wallet from the latest wedding he had crashed and numerous wedding cards in the car. So he would cash the check but hang on to the cards?
Well, you're not going to spend them right away, are you?
Police, but wouldn't you get rid of the card at least? I understand.
Oh, the cards.
Yeah.
Oh, not like a gift card.
Right. The police say that Mr. Rankin told them that he had been attending weddings because he was going through a divorce and he wanted to listen to wedding vows.
Yeah, you would. Okay.
That'd be the last thing I'd want to do if I was getting a divorce. They estimate that this guy made anywhere from $3,000 to $6,000 from those two weddings. They don't know how much he made in total. That's something they're still looking at. But he told police that he spent all of the money he stole from the weddings on fixing his bass boat. Congratulations, sir.
Uh-huh.
Police in Chandler, Arizona, southeast of Phoenix, became aware of Mr. Rankin after video footage of an April 15th wedding showed him wearing formal clothes of a guest and then grabbing a box of greeting cards, putting it in a bag, and walking out a rear exit. Running to his vehicle and then driving away. Yeah, that's kind of sus, bro.
Run away. Isn't that typically anymore at a wedding?
Yeah.
An assignment someone gets?
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
To kind of keep an eye on the gift table?
Yeah.
Hey, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like you to be a part of my wedding. Best man? No. Security.
I need you to stand
security
guard on the box.
On the box.
Yeah.
And maybe the cupcakes, too.
Well, also, given the nature of how these events have everybody rolling film all the time, right? Everybody's...
Yeah, right.
You've got videographers everywhere. It seems like a very risky thing to try and pull off.
Not to mention the facility probably has cameras everywhere.
Right. Well, yeah, they were able to see him grab the box, put it in a bag, walk out a rear exit, and then run to his car. The running to your car is kind of a giveaway too, right?
Well,
yeah, we think this that would might be
enough.
The guy.
That would be enough to prove intent to me.
Witnesses say that he would show up at weddings wearing a shirt, tie, slacks, and dress shoes, and that he was the perfect late arriving guest. So he got away with it until he didn't. You know, once the bass boat was paid off, if he would have just left well enough alone. But he kept going because as somebody who was getting a divorce, he wanted to go hear wedding vows. Oof.
I think that's a story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a feel bad for me kind of thing.
What I want is that bass boat.
What I want
up to snuff.
I want to marry my bass boat is what I want.
Is it all over, Rock?
I guess so.
I didn't think it'd be like this.
And that will bring to an exciting conclusion this installment of Dave and Darren's Top 5 Things.
Just that simple.
Yeah, we'll have another one for you before you know it. Thanks for listening. Until we get a chance to do it for you again, hang loose, kooks.
You stay classy and safe, Quad Cities.
Come on, Quad Cities, represent. This is for the Quad Cities refuge spot. Davenport, yeah, we keeping it locked.
Rock out,
come on, and it just don't stop. East Moline, yeah, they keeping it hot.
Show's over. Good night. Good night, everybody.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.